Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Carly. Carly sadly lost her mum to breast cancer in 2010 and received her own diagnosis in 2019. We'll be talking about how having a family history of breast cancer affected her and how she manages cancer-related anxiety. Carly, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So to start us off, Carly, would you be able to tell us a little bit about your personal experience with breast cancer? A bit about your mum and also about yourself, if you're comfortable doing that.
Yeah. So my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2004, the end of 2004. She had lost her mum to breast cancer before she had any children. So I'd never met my maternal grandmother, but I did obviously at some stage find out that she had died from breast cancer. So it was kind of always in my knowledge, I guess. I was aware of breast cancer from a young age. And so the day I kind of remember when my mum told me she had it, it almost felt like, oh, this, here we go. This is kind of, you know, history repeating itself or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it felt like breast cancer just had always been part of our history, our family. And then she got her own diagnosis. Originally primary breast cancer, had treatment, went into, I guess, back then, well, they called it remission back then. I don't know how often they use that anymore, but she went into remission and then it came back and obviously was secondary, had a lot of chemo and sadly died in January 2010 after about 5 years, you know, from the original diagnosis. Myself was then diagnosed with breast cancer in December 2019, so almost a decade kind of to the day, really, of losing my mum. But by some, I don't even know what you want to call it, some weird twist of fate, or my breast cancer turned out to be because of a BRCA1 gene mutation from my father's side of the family. 5 months before my diagnosis, my older sister, who is my half sister on my dad's side, was diagnosed with late stage ovarian cancer. And we found out that she carried this BRCA1 gene mutation. And I was, you know, I was going to go and get tested and get all that sorted, but breast cancer had other ideas. And so, yeah, so in December 2019, I was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer at age 37. That my doctor said was absolutely not related to my mum having had it or my grandma having had it. So, but there's just a lot of breast cancer there.
Yeah, it's just the way of things. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, there's so many factors that can determine whether a person gets breast cancer or not. Yeah. And so many of them we're still not aware of. There's so much research that's still going into it. But
exactly.
As you say, it just so happens that you had the mutation that came from one side of your family, and we don't know what it was that had caused it on your mum's, your and your nan having it as well. But
yeah,
even if that wasn't, you know, even if it wasn't the mutated gene that came from that side of your family, you obviously were still, like you say, you were aware of breast cancer.
So that's the thing. I was only 37 when I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So with my mum and her mum, they were like early 50s. Mm. I think my grandma was early 50s. My mum definitely was. She was 54 when she was diagnosed and 59 when she died. So I don't know. It's not rational, right? But in my head, I guess I thought, well, if I am going to get it, maybe I'll get it, you know, a bit later on in life. I thought I had a bit more time to kind of maybe have another child or all these things, all these stories, I guess, you tell yourself. So although I was aware of breast cancer, I definitely never ever thought I would get a diagnosis in my 30s, even though I know people do and I know you can get it younger than that. And now my eyes have obviously been opened so much by being part of the community to, you know, just such young women and men like getting diagnosed all the time. So, but yeah, it was a bit of a moment of like, no, I kind of thought this might come, but not yet. I'm not ready for you. Yeah. But breast cancer just has other ideas.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Yeah. I can't imagine just that kind of, even if you did have it in the back of your mind, you're still absolutely blindsided by it no matter when it happens.
Yeah. It looms. It was, I guess the only way to describe it is it was one of my biggest fears ever, like having lost my mum to it and watched her suffer so terribly as well, you know, especially towards the end of her life. So it was just a huge fear of mine. I mean, I had gone 3 years before my own diagnosis because of my husband and some friends like saying, please go get tested and see if you can get, you know, tested for this BRCA gene mutation. So I did go and have a conversation to see if I was eligible for it. But actually, the irony was they said there wasn't enough young cancer in the family. And because it's come from my other side of the family where there wasn't any until my sister got diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and then I did, now we're kind of, you know, have opened that can of worms in a way. But I guess it was that thing of always being a fear that then came true.
And with regards to finding out that you did have the BRCA1 gene, how did that news come to you, especially as you had already sort of pursued, you know, investigating and we're told, you know, it probably, yeah, you know, you might not need to investigate. How did that news come to you as well?
Finding out about the BRCA1 gene mutation, I would, if I'm honest, that was the time I cried the most. Mm. Getting the diagnosis, I did break down and cry and got the shock and everything like that. And there were many, many tears, but a real deep, you know, deep mourning almost came when I found out I did carry the gene, even though I was pretty sure I did. Mm. Just because of the implications for my own children. And because if anyone's listening that doesn't know, it gives a 50-50 chance that I've got two young children. They were 4 and 6 when I was diagnosed. So they have a 50-50 chance of carrying it themselves. And, you know, you don't want your children to have any risk of getting any kind of any illness at all, let alone cancer. But you know, as with everything, very quickly it was like, I can't think about that yet. It's, they're 4 and 6. It's not really a conversation that's going to be had until they're, you know, maybe in their teens when they've got a bit more understanding, they can then know that mine was due to a BRCA1 gene mutation, but they won't be able to be tested till they're 18 if they want to be tested. Mm-hmm. So it was very much a thing of, you know, actually kind of pinning a bit of hope on science and research and all that kind of stuff that's changing all the time and developing all the time. So I was able to park it in a way. It's still there. I still get, you know, that they're my babies. I kind of sometimes will think, oh, do they have it? Do they not? But I try to tend not to. And again, I think I try and really not think too much about what would have been had I been tested the 3 years before my diagnosis, because things would have been so different. But I do have a real belief that everything is as it has to be. So there is, it doesn't do me too well to kind of sit in the what would have been space. It just will end up, you know, with regrets and all kinds of things. So actually, yeah, I try not to think too much about it.
Yeah, and that sounds like a really positive attitude to have towards this. But I imagine it took you a while to get there. I mean, how did you initially kind of, were there lots of anxieties that you were grappling with? Did it kind of take you a while to adjust that attitude that you have?
I think, yes, definitely. It was not like I don't think you can hear the words you've got cancer and immediately, you know, get this kind of, for want of a better word, I guess, positive outlook or inner strength. It doesn't, it's there, and I would say it's there for absolutely anyone that faces any trauma. It is within all of us that we can face these difficult things. But you have to grieve and you have to go through the motions of all everything that comes with your world basically turning upside down and back to front and all sorts. So I allowed all that, all the grief in, and the tears and the fear and everything like that. But I think it didn't, especially with the history of my mum, I don't think I would have been able to get through the, I had 16 rounds of chemo. I then had a double mastectomy, lymph node removal, a week in hospital during COVID alone, radiotherapy, immunotherapy, you know, it goes on and on. It was like 15 months of treatment. But if I kept in the headspace of this disease killed my mum, I don't know how I would have really found that kind of courage that it took to get through. So for me, it was very much a mental decision to say, I have a different type of breast cancer, which I did. I had triple negative, hers was hormonal, different times, you know, science and medicine had improved, had changed, just all of that. And just kind of saying, this is my story and it's going to be different, and it's going to be a different one. And just kind of, and in a way also doing it like that to honor her, who also showed me how strong and positive she was with her diagnosis. I mean, to the point where really when she was so unwell in hospital, it still was like, other than 2 days before she died, I think I was thinking, well, she's still going to be okay. Like she really, you know, she really, really faced it head on and with a great attitude as well. So I think, yeah, it was just, I took that strength and kind of went running with it with my own story, which I think is, regardless of if it's your mom or if it's, you know, we're all going to have some scary stories from cancer, sadly. And you just have to know that yours is maybe not going to be that way too. You just, you know, we're all different. Yeah. On different paths.
Yeah. The way you speak about this, I mean, obviously everything you've been through has been so difficult, but you're speaking about it in such a kind of like an empowering way. It feels like you've really kind of claimed that ownership over you know, everything that you've been through, and, yeah. and kind of you know your own strength in that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that you share a lot of your stories on social media and kind of try and share this attitude and this kind of encouragement and empowerment to other people. What was it that sort of inspired you to do that? Because I mean, with a lot of people, it's maybe something that you don't really want to engage with thinking about too much, but you've really done an excellent thing in kind of sharing it and sharing that positivity.
Thank you. For me, I have always loved to write. So I think from just a background thing of even being a child, I just always was kind of in my imagination writing, and somewhere along the way that kind of, you know, went to the side with being an adult. But I would dip in and out of writing the odd poem here or there just for a bit of fun. And I had a public Instagram before my diagnosis. I just, me and my husband have a business that's in kids kind of travel. And so I was kind of in that world a bit of the mummy blogger world, I guess. And so sharing and connecting with people, and also doing my bit to talk about grief and what that can feel like and look like, and also to raise awareness for breast cancer, which ever since my mum died, and actually even before, like, was something that we all were very passionate about, just to talk about it and to get people checking their breasts and, you know, all this stuff. And so actually only a month before my diagnosis, I was in a pink bra with like loads of other incredible women, a lot of which had breast cancer, raising awareness, doing a shoot for October Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And all of this time, my older sister was going through treatment for ovarian cancer. I wasn't sharing about it on social media. It wasn't my story. And it was this thing where we, at one point, had a conversation. It was like, I said, I feel so like I'm in two worlds, because on the one hand, I'm on chemo units with you, having chemo. And then I'm just sharing about like parenting life and, you know, carrying all these bags full of, like, I don't know, tats that you end up doing. And it just felt like I was like, not a fraud necessarily, but just, I think with social media, my gut is to just be as honest as possible to try and help people. We've, as a family, had a lot of experience of mental illness and obviously the loss of my mum and breast cancer now and all this stuff. So for me, having a love of writing, if I can somehow share and connect with people and help people to feel less alone, then that is something I feel quite passionate about. And we kind of had this conversation, and I said, well, if it was me, I probably would have to share and write about it and try and raise awareness. And then I got my diagnosis, and I remember thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to. I actually, it felt quite daunting, especially like the rawness of just being told. But once the dust settled a bit and we'd spoken to a few friends and family knew, and, you know, you get your head around it, and I'd had this staging scan, I knew what I was dealing with. At that point, I just said, no, I want to do this. And my husband was, you know, wholeheartedly agreed that go for it. Like, it's your, you know, it's your platform. And I just remember the day, like, sharing and saying, I've got breast cancer, and just feeling like this relief of like, it's not, doesn't have to be this secret. I can use this. I can share. And I would say that it's been great, and it's the best thing for me to have connected with so many incredible people. And there's obviously a lot of loss and heartache that happens too, because you connect with people that aren't here anymore. But there's a community that holds you and support you. I still sometimes struggle, having shared now for almost, I guess, 2.5 years, the ups and the downs. I struggle to really share the dark times, because I am a positive person, and I do feel I have a relatively good grasp and outlook on like what I believe is the true essence and beauty of this life. And I think a breast cancer diagnosis or any trauma or diagnosis can sometimes do that to you, like really get you to value and shift your perspective on things. And I love being able to share that. And then sometimes, I guess, when the fear takes over, when the darkness takes over, it can be more difficult to share in real time that it's actually, there's so much that cancer can linger after. Even I've had a complete pathological response, but you know, there's a lot of anguish there too. And I don't know, I guess it's that thing of feeling not responsible. I'm not responsible for anyone but myself, but just not wanting to, I never would want to scare anybody, but I also do feel you have to be authentic and share your truth. So yeah, it's been great to share online, but it can definitely be tricky water sometimes to navigate.
Yeah. Oh God, I don't doubt that for a second. Yeah. No. And I mean, having never personally experienced cancer myself, but having spoken to a lot of people just through the podcast, through working with Breast Cancer Now, a lot of people that have, they seem to find so much value in that community and hearing other people's stories. And it is so valuable, but at the same time comes at a cost to that individual of sharing their story. Isn't it an easy thing to do? So,
no.
Which is why we really appreciate people like you coming on the podcast and talking about it.
I think if ever there's like, and I'm sure other people that share will appreciate this, the doubt kicks in and it's like, oh, you know, what am I doing? Who am I even talking to? Like, are people, you know, are people listening? Whatever, all that kind of imposter syndrome stuff kicks in. But I would say just this week, I had a message from somebody who I'd met who has just found out they've got cancer, and basically has said that by hearing a few people in the community tell their stories, it meant that they check regularly and they never had done before. And it's like, when you hear that stuff and you hear that there's been a direct impact on somebody getting a potential early diagnosis of breast cancer, then it kind of just, you know, throws it all out. You realize that all this self-doubt and stuff that we've had our whole lives probably, which a lot of my diagnosis has kind of healed a lot of that stuff, I would say, and made me realize like, oh my God, life is so short. Like, it is short, and we don't know when it's going to come and, like, you know, knock us sideways, and we don't know any of this. So it's helped me with those voices, but sometimes they're still there, because that's just years and years, you know, a lifetime of conditioning to be a little bit like in self-doubt and self-loathing even.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yeah. And I think
that there's been good healing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear there's that healing aspect of it as well. But I imagine there's something, again, we hear from a lot of people that have had a breast cancer diagnosis, even if they haven't had a history of it in their family, even if it's you know, it's just with them, is that kind of ongoing health anxiety around it as well, especially when it comes up to scans.
Yeah.
any kind of routine hospital visits. Is it, do you kind of work to mitigate that in a way? Is that something that you also talk about?
Yeah. So I would say in terms of the whole mental health element, when I was diagnosed, I was actually in therapy at the time already because of my older sister having her cancer diagnosis and various other things going on that, and I've had, I'm a big advocate of therapy. I've had a lot of it from my teens all the way through. So I was already in therapy with my diagnosis, which I think was a massive help. Mm. I had watched my mum, her mental health decline massively after her primary breast cancer treatment finished. And so I was quite aware that like there is this sense of falling off a cliff edge at the end. And what now obviously people talk a lot about of like this kind of like the black hole of you just kind of it's done and you're set free, enjoy your life. And it's like, what the hell has just happened? Like, how can I do that? I've got, my body has changed. My mind has changed. I've got these thoughts, like cancer is so prevalent in my mind. Like, you know, you can't look in the mirror without thinking about it. So all this stuff. And so I did try my best to kind of mitigate that actually happening throughout all my treatment. I was really aware of my mental health and taking the time for myself and stuff. Obviously, there was a pandemic, which made it a little bit tricky at times. But generally speaking, however, it still happened. And I think it kind of, I guess, goes to show the power of what you go through and what a diagnosis can take from you in a way. And so no matter how positive you are or how much hope you have, that there is extra support needed, potentially not for everybody, but I found for me, absolutely. And it happened for me when I was having radiotherapy, because I think I'd had all the chemo alongside immunotherapy and then this massive surgery. And that had been in my head, like, get through the chemo, get through the surgery. And I think when it was like, oh, now you've just got radiotherapy, it's like, no, like you don't just have radiotherapy, like you're on the floor physically, mentally, emotionally, like everything is, you know, everything has changed. And I just, so at that point I did get an oncology counselor who helped me more than he will ever realize. Just I've had, like I said, quite a lot of therapists, but there was something about him and his way and his awareness of how to be compassionate to yourself and to others. Like, I think my mum would have been the first to say I was very compassionate to others, but never really to myself. And so he helped me to really shift into this space that has just been, like I said, so incredibly healing and so important. And that's kind of one of the things I just try and share to people is just like, don't lose sight, like have compassion for yourself, no matter how difficult things are or how hard you might find something, like just understand that you're trying your best, right? So that's just to come from that place of compassion. So that's the thing. So having him as my counselor massively helped in that space. But yes, there's still been the scans happen. And I think I would say it's about having tools. And I guess many, many years of therapy have given me tools that have allowed me to kind of, with every challenge, have something there. But now I feel like I've really got a good set that I can rely on. And it doesn't mean that things don't escalate. They do. Like, for instance, just at Christmas time, I was due to have I'd had an ovarian scan. I've since had my ovaries removed because of having the BRCA1 gene mutation. But I'd had this scan and I was due to speak to my doctor, and his secretary called and said he would like to speak to you. It was like an appointment that was moved forward, but it was at the end of the day. So I still had 6 hours to sit once I put the phone down and dwell. And your mind just cannot help but, you know, there's logic and then there's catastrophe. And it was that thing of, I know the logic, I know it, but I also know that when I went to have my ultrasound, I did not think I had breast cancer. I was convinced I had a lump under my arm that hurt. I was convinced that wasn't breast cancer and that I was wasting people's time. And even my breast doctor at the time said, it's really unlikely it's going to be, because what we've seen in the scan that showed up looks like a cyst. So you start to question everything. So when I think my scan's going to be okay, I then question, but I thought that was. So there's kind of no win in a way. And what I've come to realize is the fear happens and it takes over. And you can ebb it. You can, you know, I'm a big believer in deep breathing and, you know, meditation. And I've done like a wellness coaching course now. So I've got all of those tools as well that can really help to just get you grounded and get you back in the present moment of not allowing your brain to kind of rush away. And ultimately that is it. It's like saying nothing's going to change the outcome now. Mm. I can be as panicked as I want, but it's not going to change whether it's good or whether it's bad. So it's just kind of learning. And I'm not the best at it. I'm a work in progress, but I just think this isn't, you know, this is an ongoing thing. I've got, I'm having a brain scan next week and it's going to be fine, but I was having some headaches. And so I had a brain scan 6 weeks ago and now they just want me to have another one. And it's like, there's these things, there are these things. And actually I'm really grateful I'm being so looked after that if I have something that does give a flag, they're on it, right? And they give me a scan and they check it. So yeah, it's just, it's not easy. And I can imagine anyone listening will totally get that it is not easy and our brains can sometimes be totally not on our side. But the way I see it is just bring it back to us worrying really is not going to change anything. Just not, it's just going to give us double worry potentially.
Yeah, you end up worrying about worrying and then you...
Yeah.
I think you said the word sort of catastrophe in there, and that catastrophizing is something that I think a lot of people are subject themselves to without wanting to at all, and you just sort of end up in that spiral. But you also said the word tools a couple of times in there, and I think that's so important because I think sometimes when we talk about mental health, when we talk about anxiety, health anxiety, anytime we discuss mental health, mental illness, I think the prevailing attitude is kind of it's okay not to be okay, and we've got to that point of acceptance, but it's like, well, then what? You know, we need those tools to actually tackle that not okayness and to kind of understand how to get back to a place of being okay, whatever relative okay is for you.
Exactly that. Yeah.
And you also touched on kind of after you had surgery, the chemotherapy, then radiotherapy, and then people thinking, oh, it just stops there. And we know it doesn't, which is why we have the Moving Forward program. Mm. And we try and that's our version of those tools for people to hopefully still have that ongoing support even after they've finished with the medical side of things.
Which is so important. And I don't think I've spoken to one person that's finished treatment that has found it a walk in the park. Not one person. The general conversation is that you almost have to put on a smile because everyone around you so desperately wants things to be normal again, right? Like, it's done, yay! And it is a celebration, don't get me wrong. Like, finishing chemo, finishing surgery, finishing all active treatment is a serious celebration and a serious milestone. But it's also just imperative that it's not forgotten, I guess, in a way, and that it's talked about, and that maybe you still ask the questions of like, how are you feeling about everything? You know, just having that support and that's why I guess the community is so important, or I found so important, because you can just talk about your fears without bringing people down. I don't want necessarily to burden my friends and family with the stream of fears that can come up. And also, I obviously don't want to sit in fear. So that is that thing of trying to just continuously live in love as opposed to fear. But I'm a human and I have kids that I want to see grow up, and I have had a very aggressive form of breast cancer. So fear inevitably does sit there. And just having even last night, I had a conversation with someone who also has triple negative breast cancer. And it was just like, you just feel so heard and so understood. So I think it's important to just keep these conversations going.
Yeah, I really like that phrase, living in love and not in fear. I think that's really wonderful. But as you say, it is important to still accept what is there and manage it as best you can.
I probably always was as well, since losing my mum especially, like there was a big spiritual element of a connection that I feel with her. But even more so since my breast cancer diagnosis. And I do truly have that belief of like there's something bigger, and I trust so much in the, you know, that bigger, in that bigger thing. I do, and I kind of have let go of a lot of control, and I accept that we're not in that much control in this lifetime. You know, it keeps me from being in as much fear as I used to be. But like I said, we're messy humans, and we are allowed to be, right? And we're allowed to all be one thing one day and then have a mad fear the next, and just accept that that's just something that's come along. And the less we fight it, the more it just flows along. And then you get back to feeling, you know, like I said, in that place of love and trust and surrendering again. But it's almost a constant loop.
I think that's probably a really excellent message to leave it on, actually, is just that we're messy humans and we're yes. allowed to be. But if people want to follow you on social media, and if people want to, read about these really encouraging things that you're putting out there, where can they find you?
So my Instagram is Carly Moussa, which is Carly, M for mother, OOSAH. It's just my name. And I would always say my DMs are always open. I love connecting, love chatting. And like I said, I've just trained in wellness coaching, so I'm looking to kind of develop that as well, and hopefully have a website soon, but I'm just getting to grips with all of that digital stuff.
Well, just from speaking to you and having this brief conversation now, I think you're going to be absolutely smashing at it. You'll be brilliant.
Thank you.
You just have a really great energy talking about these things, and I'm sure you do really help a lot of people just by what you're putting out there. So yeah, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for everything you do at Breast Cancer Now.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.